I am now going to introduce Gurinder Mann, who we are most thankful to have speak to us today. Gurinder?
Thank you. Thank you so much, Marilyn. It's an absolute privilege to be here this morning amongst you all. Thank you for having me. Let me begin by saying a sincere thanks on behalf of myself and our organization. We feel honored that we were chosen by you all as your charity for the coming year. We are a small nonprofit organization, so fundraising is an ongoing endeavor for us. And to be recognized as your charity for the upcoming year was certainly very humbling, and it felt wonderful that we are that we're considered in that way. So thank you all, and I look forward to being in contact with you all over the coming year and giving you lots of stories as to how restorative justice is having a positive impact in the community. Today what I wanted to do was give both some information about our organization as well as some information about the concept of restorative justice itself and the momentum that it's gathering in our communities and the region, as well as the province and nation as well. We've been around as an organization for approximately 15 years. A tremendous amount of credit goes to the Joint Family Court and Youth Justice Committee of the Tri-Cities that did a lot of work in the late 90s in establishing our organization, the Sierra Society. One individual I'm sure you're all very aware of, you know quite well, Mr. Sandy Burpee. He made an invaluable contribution to the organization and to the community. Him and Kathy are wonderful individuals, and we are very lucky to have them in our community. Sandy, as well as some other individuals, did a tremendous amount of work with the Joint Family Court and Youth Justice Committee to establish CIRA, and we're proud that we've come a long way. We're in our 15th year, and we're very optimistic that we'll only continue to grow and expand as an organization. Actually, I should come, I think, in front of the podium. I'm kind of hiding behind there. This is a bit better, yes. So our hallmark program that we've operated for 15 years now, is the Community Youth Justice Program. And what essentially the Community Youth Justice Program is that for youth who've committed an offense, whether that be assault, theft, mischief, they might be in possession of drugs, might be vandalism, a range of different offenses. For those offenses, the police or Crown Council, they have the option of referring that to a restorative justice program such as ours. We deal very closely with Crown, as well as the RCMP, the Port Moody Police Department, and New Westminster Police. So when they refer a particular case to us involving a youth who's committed an offense, what we do is we take that particular youth who's committed an offense and the victim through a restorative justice mediation process. Now, what does that look like? What that looks like is we bring in those two parties into a family group conferencing model. So they come in and they have their supporters who can come with them as well. Now, that could be family members, it could be friends, or it could be somebody else who's been impacted by the offense, or has been impacted by, or some way has been harmed by that particular situation. So through that family group conferencing process, through that restorative justice mediation, a resolution is reached amongst the parties. And that is facilitated by our program manager and our facilitators to help them engage in a dialogue and to reach a resolution which would be outside the context of the criminal justice system. Now, I'm proud of the fact that almost 15 years now, we've processed well over 400 files. And out of those 400 files, the success rate is close to 100%, which means almost 100% of the times that a case has been referred to CIRA, we help the parties reach a resolution outside the criminal justice system, the criminal court system. And almost all the youth offenders who participate in this process, after going through it, indicate that this is something that they would not do again, because they learned that their actions had such an immense impact on the victim and other individuals and the community as a whole. About 5-6 years ago, we initiated a second program, and this was in collaboration with School District 43. And we're really proud that this has now come a long way and it's most definitely expanded, and we're hoping we can possibly implement that in other school districts as well. But that's Coquitlam School District 43. And what we do there in the Tri-Cities is we go to schools and we educate students on restorative justice principles, on conflict resolution, and how to resolve those disputes effectively, which in this day and age has become more and more important, because things like bullying and cyberbullying have become very, very multifaceted, and social media, as we all know, has made things even more difficult for parents and school administrators and even the police, because there's so much happening behind the scenes. So it's very, very important to educate students on how to deal with conflicts and to promote a setting in a school or all schools that is a safe school setting. So that program is going tremendously well in the Tri-Cities, and I've already had a dialogue with the superintendent in school district in New Westminster. We would like to implement something similar over here, promoting safe school settings in New Westminster as well. And I look forward to letting you know how that's coming along throughout the year as well. So that's a bit about our two programs, a community youth justice program, which deals more directly with the referrals from Police and Crown, and Empowering Youth, which is more of a preventative program, educating students in schools how to resolve disputes and conflict resolution. And now a bit about restorative justice itself. And I've done a lot of presentations, and I think one of the most effective ways to talk about restorative justice and to get a grasp of it is to compare and contrast it to our current criminal justice system. And because that allows us to get more of an insight as to what restorative justice has, what are the attributes that make it successful. Now, when we compare the two, our criminal justice system is focused or based more on a retributive justice system, which is focused more on a punitive approach, on punishment. So that's the focus of the criminal justice system. Now that's a bit very different than restorative justice. Because when it comes to restorative justice, the focus is very much on what's the harm that's been done. How has this offense impacted individuals, the community, the neighborhoods? What's the harm? And how do we repair that harm so we're building safe, peaceful, harmonious communities? Yes, there is that accountability component. However, the focus most definitely is not simply on punishment. In our current justice system, in the criminal court system, with the focus being on punishment, individuals are often, typically, discouraged from accepting responsibility. Because naturally, if they accept responsibility, they're going to get punished. It reminds me of a time I once received a case involving a youth, and this youth was already in contact with a lawyer. So I got a call from the lawyer, and the lawyer was very much interested in the fact that how accepting responsibility would impact the case of his client. Because obviously in a criminal court system, once a youth or any individual accepts responsibility and says, well, I did this, that can have a very adverse effect on their entire case. So that's quite different than restorative justice, because in restorative justice, individuals, communities, neighborhoods, supporters, everyone comes together to support the youth to accept responsibility for what they've done, to take accountability. And after taking that accountability, to take steps to repair the harm that's been done. Now, that's a very, very important thing because of the fact that when any individual accepts accountability, takes responsibility and says, I'm going to take adequate steps to make things right, that individual learns from this and that rehabilitates them. And that is obviously, again, very different than the criminal court system, because I think myself, the police, judges, and society as a whole now most definitely has to distinguish the fact that just by sending someone to prison or punishing them doesn't really take care of the issue. Because they come out and they do the same thing again, and quite often, once they come out, they do something which is more serious. So it's that alone, that punishment component alone, does very little to build safe, peaceful communities. One other aspect that I've always very much liked about restorative justice is the fact that it gives the victim a voice. It allows them to be a part of the process, and it dignifies their feelings and it dignifies what they've gone through, which is something that doesn't take place in the criminal court system. Yes, they can come into a courtroom, they can see what's happening, but the verdict will be given by either the judge or the jury, and after that the victim will go home. They will probably still carry that burden of maybe feeling unsafe, still going through those feelings because of the fact that they went through such a major impact, depending on what that was. But it does little for them to heal from what has happened. Restorative justice places a tremendous focus on the fact that repair has to take place for the victim, the neighborhood, and the community who's been impacted. For that reason, when a restorative justice process takes place, the victim has the opportunity to tell everyone, and most definitely the person who's committed the harm, how they've been impacted by what they've done. And not simply that, they have the opportunity to play a role in determining what the resolution is going to look like, which is completely unheard of in a criminal justice system, because again, it's the judge and jury that makes a decision as to what the resolution will look like, because the crime is against the state. It's not even against the victim. But in restorative justice, the victim gets to talk about how they've been impacted and play a very important role in determining what that repair, that resolution is going to look like. And this in turn not only makes them feel safer, but it also educates and it helps the youth who's committed the harm to rehabilitate as well. Which is why when we look at recidivism, the reoffense rate, it's very, very much lower for restorative justice than the criminal court system. Because very often what happens is when they're sitting in a restorative justice process, and so often when the victim hears what is going through in the life of the youth who's committed the offense, so often they feel sorry for them. They understand this was not simply because of the fact that this youth is a bad individual. There's so much happening in their life that led to this, which is why so many resolutions are quite as simple as an apology letter, because a victim so many times is happy with that apology letter. It's not the fact that they, even if they come there with anger and saying, well, we want this to happen to the offender, we want that to happen, but after the process takes place, they understand and they want the youth to rehabilitate. They want the youth to get that support. And that support component is very, very important as well. It reminds me of a case that we got a few years ago. This case always sticks out in my memory because I was really, really glad that it was referred to restorative justice. What happened was a particular youth was apprehended by the police for shoplifting. Now that seems like a very relatively minor crime, but once the youth came into the process, it came to light that the reason why the youth was shoplifting was he had a very severe heroin addiction. because of restorative justice. This came to light. He was able to get the support that he needed, due to which he turned his life around and he graduated from high school with distinction. Now, I hate to imagine what would have happened if the approach would have been a more punitive approach based on punishment. Where would have, I can't imagine where that youth would be today. So restorative justice focuses very much on the fact that, yes, we want to rehabilitate the youth. We want him or her to learn, and we want to support them in accepting responsibility and helping them make those changes in their life. So the process, it's very, very simple. You bring individuals together, you help them engage in a dialogue, communicate effectively, and reach a resolution. And you build safer, more harmonious neighborhoods and communities. We definitely follow up because we want to make sure that the resolution agreement, whatever it was, is followed through. And we obviously want those statistics as well, because we present them to the councils and the police agencies. So we do follow up to see if a resolution agreement has been fulfilled. And especially for individuals that need more support, our program manager does conduct follow-up to ensure that does that particular youth have that support that they need, or do they need any information or referrals to other agencies. Also what we like to do in addition to that is, and we did this a couple of years ago, is have a very comprehensive follow-up with individuals who've taken place or participated in the process over the years to see how they found the process to be, how would they rank it, and how would they recommend it, and did they find that to be helpful. And all the statistics and all the follow-up and all the information and evidence that we've gathered to date has been very, very, very positive. There's obviously crimes in society for which a criminal justice system is needed. Restorative justice is the answer to a lot of, restorative justice can play a component in every single situation, I feel, but there's some where, yes, the criminal justice system is needed. However, even for those crimes, I feel a restorative justice can run parallel and to supplement that. And one example would be for the victim, where a serious crime has occurred. If the offender is sent to prison, that does very little for the victim to go home and once again feel safe. And also, there are certain programs out there where there is a component where you can go to jails and you can also educate and rehabilitate offenders. And restorative justice is very, very effective there as well, because you don't want an offender to come out of jail and do the same thing again. So from the perspective of the victim and the offender, restorative justice can play a parallel role, even for those serious crimes as well. For us, right now, our hallmark program is a community youth justice program, and the second program that we initiated was 6 years ago. My hope is that in the time to come, in the years to come, we can implement additional programs. That could be one of the ones that we look at. There's a few other ones, for instance, one of the things I've talked about with the police agencies is maybe like a mentorship program. Once the process of the restorative justice process has taken place, an individual who can mentor the youth to stay on the right path. So something like that. A lot of times I think, and a lot of restorative justice organizations, we are blessed that we have a lot of restorative justice organizations in the province, but funding is an ongoing concern for those organizations. We are very fortunate that based on our statistics and positive outcomes and the support that we have, we do also receive municipal funding as well. And we are really trying to really grow the program with additional sources of funding. So I think restorative justice no doubt can have and has and can and always will have a very positive impact in the community, but I think the number one obstacle that a lot of the organizations, not just regionally and provincially, but federally, are experiencing is that funding component. But I'm glad to see that over the past decade, a lot of the organizations have come a long way. And one of the reasons is that society slowly is grasping that restorative justice is the answer to a lot of the issues. We are very, very interested in extending this to adults as well, and we at this time have already begun accepting adult files. With there's a bit more of a challenge for the police to refer a lot of adult files. One, it's the nature of the crime, and two, with restorative justice in 2003, there was the Youth Criminal Justice Act, and the focus of that act was very much around lowering the incarceration of youth. So for youth being referred to the program is obviously we have a federal act, we have legislation that is very much supporting it. With adults, I feel it's going to take a bit more time, but I am glad that even at this time we are receiving adult cases, and I'm hoping that slowly, federally and provincially, the authorities will recognize that restorative justice can be utilized in more and more cases. One other area in which we've branched out is neighborhood disputes, because a lot of times police use so many of their resources to go and resolve disputes in neighborhoods. The nature of those disputes is that they can't really do much at the time, because a law really hasn't been broken, but they have to go there time and time again because there might be two neighbors or two people in the neighborhoods that are constantly quarreling. And from a resource perspective, this is very challenging. So when I myself and the superintendent in Coquitlam met, and as well as we've opened that up to the other police agencies as well, I said, well, we've got the expertise to deal with that. We'll sit down and have a restorative justice process with those parties, and this in turn will save the time for the police, and it will save resources for the municipalities. So we're slowly making way into adult files as well. So I've got no doubt that the way restorative justice is going and the dignity that it is getting, it will probably be hopefully recognized more often. A lot of countries now do recognize restorative justice. Nationally, we have a lot of restorative justice organizations, and provincially, I would say that especially Metro Vancouver, almost every single city now has a restorative justice program. As well as that, I think the United States in certain areas has made a lot of progress. England and Australia have done a lot of work in restorative justice. And there's other countries as well, but these are definitely the ones that have done a tremendous amount of work, and definitely in a lot of the European nations have definitely embraced restorative justice as well. It's on the top of my head, I don't know the exact number, but there's now a lot of studies, one of which I was trying to remember was quite recent from the University of Fraser Valley. It was done by Dr. Daryl Plekis. And there's also evidence, we were lucky to have a Center for Restorative Justice at Simon Fraser University. As well as those, there's a lot of United States findings that restorative justice clearly leads to a lower recidivism rate as opposed to the criminal justice system, which focuses specifically just on punishment. So there is a lot of evidence now out there locally, and regionally, and most definitely nationally and internationally as well. It's for the 400 files, well in the 90%, we had the two parties involved reach a resolution. And it is very atypical. To my knowledge, I've never come across an individual being referred to restorative justice a second time for the same offense again. And even for, I would say, smaller studies such as we did a lot of work with a particular high school in Coquitlam, which is one of the largest high schools. Now, I met with the principal after doing a lot of the work, and he said, Gurinder, for the youth that go through a restorative justice process, the recidivism rate is close to nil. And and naturally you can imagine the reason for that is when you suspend a student, they're not really being educated on the process. They get suspended for 3 days, they come back and do the same thing again. But when you bring them in and have a dialogue and they learn, wow, my actions really had a negative impact on one of the fellow students. And when they participate in a process like this, naturally they rehabilitate at a higher level, much higher level than if they're simply suspended or punished or for an adult sent to prison. Once the police or the Crown has referred a case to an agency, the agency takes those parties through the process, after which the police is informed and the police can then close the file. I suppose the agency can go back and talk to the police and ask them that based on their system, has that individual, has there been another file, or has that individual been committed an offence again? The challenge with that might be that they may not be able to disclose that to you from a confidentiality perspective. It's possible if they feel that they might be able to give a general kind of statistic as to the total number of files, but where it's concerned as to a particular individual, they may not be able to disclose based on the confidentiality if they've committed another offence. So that part might be difficult there. Yes. I suppose it would be, for that reason, restorative justice constantly tries to come up with new and creative quantitative and qualitative methods to assess the type of justice. But for a case like that, I'd have to think about that one, how it can be assessed, given taking into account the confidentiality component. So, yeah, absolutely, for sure. We've definitely received cases involving property crime and assaults as well. Sometimes, I think with restorative justice, sometimes what might seem as a case that is very multifaceted and complex, once you bring the parties involved, it turns out to be quite simple because of the personality traits of the victim and the offender. They might be both very, the offender might accept responsibility very quickly and the victim might be very understanding. For something that might appear to be very simple sometimes, once you bring the parties involved, because of their personality traits or how they feel, it might end up being a lot more complex. For that reason, what we typically do in our process is have a pre-mediation process to meet with both parties to ensure that this isn't something that's going to escalate if it goes to a particular process. Absolutely. I'm glad that it's quite atypical where a victim states that we don't want to be a part of the process because we feel unsafe. I was trying to come up with a particular case and nothing was coming to mind because a majority of times, in fact, there's been times that where an individual, I was looking at the file, I was thinking, would they want to be a part of this process? And I talked to the program manager and I'm actually pleasantly surprised that they're open to that given the particular type of crime that took place. But I would think that for something like an assault, it can be slightly more difficult. However, there's been cases, for instance, like a break and enter that really makes an individual feel very, very unsafe. So it would depend on the individual.
Render, thank you very, very much.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me here today.
And thank you, people, for asking the questions, too, because that really illuminated a lot of ideas here. So
thank you very much, and excellent questions. Thank you.